This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The U.S. intelligence community's inspector general has revealed very little about a whistleblower complaint to members of Congress, but President Trump is denying doing anything wrong, AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
The government's intelligence watchdog, Michael Atkinson, appeared behind closed doors, summoned to explain a reported complaint from an insider surrounding a private conversation between President Trump and a foreign leader. But House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff says Atkinson declined to tell the committee the nature of the complaint.
I don't know whether the White House isn't directly involved, because we can't get an answer to that question. But we do know that they are making some claim that a privilege may apply.
The Washington Post reports it involves a promise President Trump made to an unnamed foreign leader. But on Twitter, the president said he would never say anything inappropriate. He's aware that others are listening in, and he would only do what was right anyway. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Thursday he has important information for President Trump about how to respond to the recent attack on Saudi Arabia's oil facilities. He spoke after meeting with the leaders in Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. The top U.S. diplomat said that there was enormous consensus that Iran was responsible for the middle-of-the-night missile and drone attacks. Last weekend's attacks temporarily knocked out half the Saudi oil's production, nearly 6% of the global oil supply. Remnants of Tropical Storm Imelda are drenching southeast Texas, forcing more than 1,000 rescues and evacuations because of rising floodwaters. Imelda is largely targeting Houston, the U.S.'s fourth largest city. Forecasters predict the area will receive more than 100 centimeters of rain this week. Heavy rains grounded flights Thursday and brought the George Bush Intercontinental Airport to a halt. This is VOA News. U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper announced Thursday that the U.S. military will now be on the front lines of protecting the country's elections from foreign interference. That comes as the 2020 presidential campaign season heats up. Meanwhile, a key Senate committee approves $250 million to help states improve their election systems. AP correspondent Tim McGuire.
The Senate Appropriations Committee approves and sends to the full Senate a bill that would fund election security efforts by the states ahead of next year's elections. That move follows Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell saying he backs the funding. McConnell has been criticized by Democrats for stalling a separate election security bill. Oregon Democrat Ron Wyden not impressed, calling the proposal a joke and that the money is not required to be spent on election security, only on anything related to elections. Tim McGuire, Washington.
Israeli political challenger Benny Gantz says that he, not Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, should lead a new unity government. Gantz's centrist blue and white party won the most seats in parliament in this week's election. There was no clear winner in Tuesday's election, but Gantz's party won 33 seats to 31 for Netanyahu's right-wing Likud party. Both Netanyahu and Gantz called for a unity government, but Gantz said he should lead the next government since his party won more seats than Likud. Russia and China joined forces Thursday to block adoption of a UN Security Council resolution aimed at establishing a ceasefire in northwestern Syria and gaining full access for humanitarian workers to the province of Idlib. The two veto-wielding powers blocked the text put forward by drafters Belgium, Germany, and Kuwait, who hold the Syria humanitarian file on the Security Council. Russia said the text was doomed to failure and ignored the need for a fighting terrorist. A group of more than 500 major institutional investors have called for governments to boost efforts to tackle climate change. AP correspondent Zaria Shackley.
The banks, insurance companies, and pension funds said in a joint statement ahead of next week's UN climate summit in New York that current national commitments could lead to an unacceptably high temperature increase that would cause substantial negative economic impacts. The group includes financial giants such as Francis Amundi, Canada-based Manulife, and inside investment in the U.S. Countries that signed the 2015 Paris Climate Accord have committed to keeping global warming well below 2 degrees. I'm Zaria Shackley.
More at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon lawyers say they will end their week-long strike today, Friday.
I can tell you, most Cameroonians are very relieved, and they can now count on lawyers as a force to reckon with.
Evaristo Molfa is the leading Cameroonian human rights lawyer. South Sudan's president hosts a prayer service for peace in the country. Former Ivory Coast President Gbagbo's party is looking forward to his return to be their candidate in the 2020 election. Zimbabwe hospitals turn away patients as doctors' strike continues. Meanwhile, the doctor who was allegedly abducted last week resurfaced late Thursday.
I remember being in a basement of some sort, being electrocuted at some point. That's what I vividly remember. I just don't know.
That's Dr. Peter Magumbiye. And the 12th Commonwealth Women's Affairs meeting is underway in Kenya's capital, Nairobi. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. One-week strike action organized by the Cameroon Bar Association is expected to end today, Friday. The lawyers say the strike was necessary because authorities have made it difficult for them to effectively carry out their duties. Evariste Molfa, a leading Cameroonian human rights lawyer, says the strike has had an overwhelming support from both civil society and human rights organizations.
I can tell you, most Cameroonians are very relieved, and they can now count on lawyers as a force to reckon with. Most of them, litigants whose matters have been adjourned, have not asked to grind with lawyers. They are happy with the action that lawyers have taken because it is for their protection.
But do you think human rights groups in the country, including human rights lawyers, are right in supporting this strike, since some argue that it stands not to change anything at all?
When the lawyers met and resolved to strike, civil society, human rights associations, NGOs, wrote and said they share in total what the lawyers were doing. If a government is bad government, the civil society, the lawyers should not be hopeless. And so they thought they could strike so that the public knows what they are going through, because the reasons for which they were striking were enumerated and handed to the powers that be. Can you imagine people appearing in court naked? Lawyers who are supposed to be human rights defenders are caught up, flogged and locked up at any time by gendarmes and the police officers now in the northwest and southwest, including soldiers who are supposed to be in the barracks.
But some argue that it appears most of you lawyers who are on strike are defenders of the separatists, and that you are in cahoot with people who want to divide the country, create tension, you know, undermine the territorial integrity of Cameroon. So you are part to blame in this ongoing saga. How do you respond to that?
I understand your worry, and you see you risk falling prey to their worries, which to me are lame. It is during the trial of those people that most of the violations of human rights were registered. Why is it that when lawyers defend people suspected of having stolen, they are not called accomplices of thieves? This is not the first case we are doing. Why did they not liken us, or that we have participated in theft when we defend those accused for stealing? Their argument is lame. And as I say, it is during the trial of those who were brought from the northwest and southwest region that this country has registered the grievous violations of human rights. It is in the military tribunal that people appeared naked, or those arrested in the northwest and southwest were brought to court naked in the court of first instance, Sekuno. So lawyers are human rights defenders.
Evaristo Molfa is a leading Cameroonian human rights lawyer. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Yaoundé. The Zimbabwean doctor whose disappearance last Saturday sparked a wave of doctor strikes across the country reappeared alive late Thursday. However, and as Kip Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe service reports, Dr. Peter Magumbiye's recollection of his disappearance is vague.
Speaking on VOA Zimbabwe Services Live Talk program Thursday, a disoriented sounding Dr. Peter Magumbiye, the acting president of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, confirmed he was the one on the other end of the phone.
I honestly don't know how to truly identify myself, but Dr. Peter Magumbiye from Malawi Hospital.
The doctor, who had been spearheading calls for an increase of doctors' salaries when he disappeared, said he could not remember what exactly happened to him or how he ended up where he was, an area called Nyabira, about 21 miles from Harare.
That's the part he and this is fake about. I think I need time to recall.
Struggling to speak, Magumbiye said he didn't have any obvious signs of physical injury, but only generalized pain. He said his last recollection before being taken by unnamed people were memories of being electrocuted.
I remember him being in a basement of some sort, being electrocuted at some point. That's what I vividly remember. I just don't know. I really remember anything.
Missing since Saturday, Magumbiye said a lot of what happened during that time, including if he had anything to eat or if he was blindfolded, was too vague for him to articulate.
I barely remember anything. I think I'm having a retrograde amnesia. I just don't know.
Zimbabwe's government and police have denied involvement in Magumbiye's disappearance, but said they were doing all they could to find the doctor. The government also indicated the Third Force could be involved in the disappearance to taint its image. Responding to the police allegation and also Twitter posts alluding to the same accusations, Magumbiye said he had no answer.
I need time to think about it.
Zimbabwe doctors, some of who were already on strike since early September, demanding pay increments, intensified their strike following Magumbiye's disappearance and vowed not to return to work until he was found. At the time of the interview, Magumbiye said he was waiting for the police and his colleagues to pick him up. One of his colleagues told VOA Zimbabwe Service that he was picked up by the police later, who took him to Central Police Station in Harare. Lawyers representing the doctor said police denied them permission to have access to their client. Police spokesperson Assistant Commissioner Paul Nyati refused to comment, saying he will issue a statement. Reporting for VOA Zimbabwe Service in Washington, I am Kip Stube.
Government hospitals in Zimbabwe have started turning away patients as a strike by doctors and nurses drags on. Negotiations have been held up by the disappearance of the strike leader, a young doctor whom fellow health workers believe was abducted by security forces. Columbus Mavonga reports from Harare.
Doctors and nurses leave Zimbabwe's biggest hospital, heading to Parliament to hand over a petition regarding the disappearance of Peter Gabriel Magumbiye, acting president of the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association. From March of Thursday, the entrance to the hospital was turned into a place to protest and to address journalists. No patients were being treated at the facility. 53-year-old Susan Tembo, a cancer patient, was one of the patients watching, hoping the strike and the protests would soon come to an end. Tembo says, "I was looking forward to being treated today, but I do not know when this missing Dr. Peter will be found so that they can resume working and they attend to me. I am in pain. The abduction of Peter and the doctor's strike is really making me feel the pain more. I'm now struggling to walk," she says. September 3rd is when Magumbiye called for the industrial action. His colleagues say that is what led to security forces abduct their leader. Nurses joined the doctor strike this week following the disappearance of Magumbiye. Tawanda Zakada from the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association says health workers feel for the patients, but they can't call off the strike.
"We do not draw any pleasure from it. It actually pains us, because those patients might be one of us here, might be our relative. But it's so unfortunate that the employer has put us in a corner, and it really, really hits us."
Health Minister Obadiah Moyo says the government played no role in the disappearance of the outspoken Magombe. He also says army doctors and nurses are being deployed to hospitals while the doctors and nurses remain on strike. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, September 20th. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. South Sudan President Salva Kiir has called on his country's armed forces to stop unnecessary shootings, which he says are too common in South Sudan. Mr. Kiir made the remarks at a prayer service held Thursday at the presidential palace. As Winnie Cirino reports from Juba, one church leader says in addition to prayers, political leaders must do everything in their power to restore peace in the country.
While welcoming participants of the prayer meeting at the Presidential Palace, locally known as Jowan, Mr. Kiir said he deliberately left the walls of the palace unrepaired so that the holes caused by gunfire during the July 2016 fighting between government troops and rebel leader Riek Machar's bodyguards remain visible. Kiir said the holes are a symbol of the untreated wounds of the South Sudanese people. About 1,000 people, including government officials, judges, civil society activists and religious leaders, participated in the prayer service. Speaking in Arabic, Kiir said the communal prayer was for all South Sudanese. The president also said he is determined to fully implement the revitalized peace agreement and form a unity government by the November deadline.
I want to frankly tell you that in November, it's a must that the government shall be formed. If the SPLM-IO does not want the formation of the government, the other parties that signed the peace agreement have to go ahead with the SPLM and form the government. I hope my colleague here, Henry Odoa, will take my message to Dr. Riek Machar that we want all of us here in Juba. Even if he comes in October, we don't have a problem.
President Kiir used the event to call on the country's armed forces to stop unnecessary shootings and carrying out armed robberies on civilians. Paulino Lokudu-Loro, Archbishop of the Catholic Archdiocese of Juba, welcomes the prayer service at the Presidential Palace, but says the country's political leaders have held many prayers before, and what the country needs is lasting peace.
We have been praying a lot in this country, all our churches, all of us. We have been praying for peace, the peace of South Sudan. We even reached our religious leaders in the world, in the Vatican, and the greatest of our faith, the religious leaders of the world, prayed for us, the feet of every South Sudanese.
Archbishop Loro says he's tired of hearing foreigners say South Sudanese know what is happening in their country is bad, but do nothing about it. Severia Chan, who took part in the reconciliation prayer, says frequent prayers can help change the situation in South Sudan. The government organized a national day of prayer and fasting for peace under the theme Repentance and Forgiveness. Last April, President Kiir and Riek Machar traveled to the Vatican at the invitation of Pope Francis to pray for peace in South Sudan and to commit to working together peacefully for the good of the country. For VOA News, I am Winnie Cirino in Juba.
Women living in Commonwealth member states have agreed to prioritize gender equality in their respective countries. Patricia Scotland, Secretary General of the Commonwealth, said that 13 Commonwealth members have so far achieved the global target of 30% of parliament women in parliament, with Rwanda leading the world. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Speaking during the 12th Commonwealth Women Affairs Meeting opening ceremony in Nairobi, Commonwealth Secretary General Patricia Scotland said that the Commonwealth average for members of parliament who are women stands as 23%, still short of that of the global target of 30%.
13 Commonwealth members have so far achieved the goal target for 30%. Of parliamentary membership to be women, with, of course, as we know, Rwanda leading the world. The Commonwealth average for members of parliament who are women stands at 23%, still short of that global target of 30%.
The 53 Commonwealth member states have the responsibility to prioritize agendas such as women leadership, women's economic empowerment, ending violence against women and girls, and gender and climate change. Sophie Helen, a member of the British royal family representing the Queen, has urged Commonwealth member states to strive in ensuring women are involved in decision-making processes.
Together, we need to have an increased focus on ending gender inequality and discrimination, and an increased focus on building environments that enable women's political participation and economic empowerment.
Kenya has failed for the fourth time to pass into law the two-third gender rule that would see women occupy the two-thirds of the political seats in parliament. Reading President Uhuru Kenyatta's speech, Kenya's Sports Minister Ambassador Amina Mohamed assured the Commonwealth member states of Kenya's efforts to achieve gender equality.
We should therefore make concerted efforts to promote women's engagement in every aspect of our development.
Africa is still struggling to achieve at least 20% of the gender equality, as most of the political seats are male-dominated. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
An official former Ivory Coast President Laurent Gbagbo's political party says the party is looking forward to Mr. Gbagbo's return to Ivory Coast to be its candidate in the 2020 presidential election. Mr. Gbagbo and Charles Blay Goudé were acquitted earlier this year by the International Criminal Court, the ICC, for alleged crimes against humanity. But ICC Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda said this week that she would ask the judges to reverse the acquittal and declare a mistrial. Jean-Gervais Djeide, the vice president for finance of Mr. Gbagbo's Ivorian Popular Front Party, says the party is waiting on the chief prosecutor to tell the world on what basis, she says, the judges made mistakes in their decision.
We are not that surprised, because we knew that it was possible for her to act that way. Now, we are waiting for her to let us know on what basis she said that the judges made mistakes in their decision. Apart from that, there's no special reaction. Of course, some people are disappointed, but we have had enough time to consider the situation and say that there's no reason to be disappointed. We have more hope than disappointment.
The former president was supposed to come back, and you were looking forward to the former president coming back to Cote d'Ivoire.
That's true. And we still are looking forward to his coming back to Cote d'Ivoire. We know that he will come back to Cote d'Ivoire. We have no doubt at all about that. He will come back.
I was reading where, I think it's the lawyer that said that Fatou Bensouda has no evidence against Laurent Gbagbo and that she's politically maneuvering to delay Gbagbo's return to Cote d'Ivoire. Do people feel
of
that way there too?
Yeah, that is clear that today the ICCP is being used for political reasons. And that is regrettable, because this maneuver of Mrs. Fatou Bensouda is nonsense. It is useless. We know that she knows that there's no reason why she should hope to have any victory in the end. After 2 years of trial, after 82 persons certified that Mr. Gbagbo had done this or that, and this is a total failure. So now she's trying to delay his coming back to Cote d'Ivoire, and they are trying to make sure that he will not be able to be candidate for the coming presidential election. But once again, this is a waste of time, because the people of Cote d'Ivoire know who they want to be president. And when the moment comes, they will let it know.
Cote d'Ivoire has elections next year, 2020, the former President Gbagbo's party. Are you going to take part in these elections?
Well, we will take part in this election, and Mr. Gbagbo is going to be our candidate. There's no doubt about that. So those who are trying to maneuver to put him aside are wasting their time. You will see how things will turn out.
You said that former President Gbagbo will be your candidate?
Yes. As far as we are concerned, unless he himself says that, no, I'm not interested. But we, as the president of our party, we have no reason to choose somebody else unless he himself decides otherwise.
Jean-Gervais Djeide is the vice president for finance of former President Laurent Gbagbo's Ivorian Popular Front Party. You're speaking with us from the capital, Abidjan. Five minutes past the hour, time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson. Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Egypt, where the Egyptian Football Association has appointed former Al Ahly player and coach Hassam Al-Badri as Egypt's national team manager. The 59-year-old will succeed Mexican coach Javier Aguirre, who was sacked last July following the Pharaohs' shock elimination from the 2019 African Cup of Nations round of 16 held at home. Al-Badri is the first Egyptian coach in Egypt's hot seat in 4 years, following Argentine tactician Hector Cooper, who reigned from 2015 to 2018, and Aguirre, who was in charge from 2018 to 2019. Elsewhere in Madagascar, Frenchman Nicolas Dupuis has signed a new 4-year deal as coach of Madagascar, but still continue his dual role with French lower league club AS Feluri 91. The 51-year-old Dupuis led Madagascar to their first ever African Cup of Nations finals in Egypt this year, where they stunned the continent with their run all the way to the quarterfinals. Staying with football news, Moroccan club Wydad Casablanca has launched a new appeal with the Court of Arbitration for Sport over the decision to declare Esperance the winners of their CAF Champions League final last season. The latest move by Wydad is challenging the decision by the Confederation of African Football Commission last month to award Tunisian side Esperance the title. You will recall that Wydad Casablanca players stormed off an hour into the return leg in Tunis on May 31st after a VAR malfunction meant a disallowed equalizer could not be reviewed. CAF had called for the second leg to be replayed at a neutral venue, but that decision was later overruled by the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Senegal remained the top-ranked African team on the continent, with African champions Algeria still fourth in the continental rankings and 18 places behind in the latest FIFA poll of men's national teams released for the month of September. The new monthly rankings released by World Football Governing Body on Thursday has Senegal in 20th place, Tunisia in the 29th, Nigeria in the 34th, and Algeria in the 38th spot, with Morocco just one place behind the current winners of the African Cup of Nations tournament in Egypt. In athletics news, Jacqueline Wambui, who won the 800 meters at the Kenyan trials, and Linda Kahiga, who was in the mixed relay team, have withdrawn from the World Championships after failing to take mandatory testosterone level tests. Athletics Kenya vice president in charge of competitions, Paul Mutui, said Wambui and Kahiga had declined a mandatory test and withdrew from the Global Showpiece event in Doha. Wambui's withdrawal left 2013 world champion Eunice Som as Kenya's only entrant in the women's 800 meters event. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A large array of international players, including corporate giants in the United States and China, has profited from South Sudan's long civil war, according to a new report by a Washington, D.C.-based watchdog group. The investigative group, The Century, which reports on links between corruption and mass atrocities in Africa, charged in its report released in London on Thursday that several businesses owners and corporate entities engaged in widespread government-sanctioned corruption. That's it for this Friday, September 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beck, for reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with sports editor Samson Omale, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.